Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Yucca.
Today we're going to talk about sacred space, what it is, how to create it, and how to build sacred space into your own home.
Exactly. And we'll also get into a little bit building that in shared spaces, because we know that a lot of people are in situations where they share space, first of all, but might be with a roommate, a dorm mate, you know, parents, spouses, anything like that. And they may not be in a situation where their aesthetics, but also their beliefs are shared.
Right. And so it becomes sort of a threading the needle process of, you know, how do you get your needs met while also accommodating the needs of the other people in your household? So we'll be talking about that some as well. But let's start with just what sacred space is, because it's a little hard to define. In my experience, sacred space is the environmental conditions that facilitate my moving into a ritual state of mind. And that typically includes things like low lighting levels, like candlelight, aesthetically pleasing and metaphorically symbolic objects and decor.
Mm-hmm.
It might include music that is facilitative for that. And personally, I like to live in sacred space. I decorate my room in a manner that is, it's kind of like a temple in that way. It has, you know, amazing sort of masks from all over the world on the walls and various, you know, pieces of art and symbolic objects and candlesticks and cauldrons and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I think I share your idea of sacred space as a space that can help move you into that ritual space and that really just influences the way that we feel. It's something that I'm very aware of because one of my parents was an architect. So I grew up on job sites and building and all of those things. And so the shape of the space, the feeling of the space is something always present. And the awareness of just what it feels like to walk into one room versus another room or one building versus another, or to step out, it really, really changes our moods and just our awareness of the world.
Yes, yes. And I think this is something that we often don't pay much attention to. We just kind of slide on through our passage from space to space without really acknowledging how it's influencing our psyche and our emotions. But as we've said over and over again, a big element of being a science-based pagan is learning to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And being aware of our environment. And that includes the built environment. It doesn't just include the natural environment. It includes the built environment. You know, we live in houses and apartments and you know, various places.
RVs. And
yes. And in some cases, tents. But still, we live in constructed spaces. And our ability to make those spaces feel good to us is something we have choices about. Most of us have choices about. And so over the years, I have collected various pieces of artwork and furniture items and so forth that speak to me of a particular aesthetic. And I deploy those in my room in a way that kind of augments the altar that's sort of the centerpiece of it, the focus. And so at night, I can put on some music and light some candles, and I'm really most of the way there into the ritual state before I even do any breathing exercises or visualization or any of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like you're describing space that you're stepping into, right? Because sometimes some people are lucky enough to be in a position where they get to actually design and build the physical space, but mm-hmm. most of us step into spaces that were built by somebody else for many different reasons, but we can then do things with those spaces, like creating the altar, changing the lighting, maybe changing the color in the room may not be a possibility in terms of wall painting, but it might be right. You might be able to paint the wall or put a temporary wallpaper up, or just the color of the bed sheets, right? All of those things have a huge influence on getting you into that space or whatever the space is that you're designing for.
Yes. And you can be playful about it. For example, I like to hang a couple of lead crystals in my window because when the afternoon sun comes in, suddenly I have little dancing rainbows all over my room and it's cool. You know, it's just a little trick of physics that is pleasing to me and has a magical sort of quality.
We actually got those for the kids for solstice, just past the summer solstice. And the next morning they came out. We have it in the east window and mm-hmm. the light, and it was just all over the house. And both of them came out with the cute little groggy eyes and went, oh, wow. And then went around trying to touch them and like opening their mouths, pretending to eat them. And so every morning it's an excitement of coming out and seeing like, oh, you know, where are the rainbows? And are they on mom and dad's head while they're trying to drink their morning tea? Mm-hmm. So we've got those same things. And they're just sun catchers is another word for them. They're just amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, there are so many things that we can do. We talk about ritual technologies and, you know, a lot of those ritual technologies are active things that we can do when we're in the process of designing or conducting a ritual, things like chanting and singing and drumming and stuff like that. But there are also these sort of passive things we can do in terms of, you know, lighting candles or putting on some particular kind of music that's very evocative for us, burning incense or herbs that creates a particular scent that takes us into a deeper, more present kind of space. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that because I pay attention to shaping the built environment around me, my home and my room become more of a sanctuary to me, more of a place where I feel held and safe and in my power than I would otherwise.
So for you, do you bring in plants and living things as well? Is that something that really helps you get in that into that space? Or is that something in a different part of the house?
Yes, we have a lot of plants. Nemea particularly has a whole lot of plants. I have two here in my room, a spider plant, which has little babies kind of dangling down from it that runs down the side of my focus. And then a sort of broadleaf, looks a little like an ivy, but it's not ivy. And
so both low light tolerant.
Yes. And very helpful. It's helpful to have living things, you know, as a part of that structure. I know that for some people, their magical aesthetic isn't necessarily as intersected with the natural world as mine is. But, you know, if you look on my focus, you find pine cones and seashells and sea urchins and lots of natural rocks, of course, bones, feathers, lots of natural things, because they all remind me of just how incredible it is out there.
Hmm.
So how about you, Yucca? What are your approaches to creating a sacred space within the home?
Yeah. So it depends on which space. So this is something that I'm very, very intentional about before moving into a new space. And we've just been finally completely moving into what we plan to be our forever home, is the hope for that. So, you know, we have a lot more freedom in terms of changing things than we've ever had as renters before. But I really sit down and plan out the spaces and think about the flow of the spaces and how people would be moving from room to room and what are the feelings that we really want to have in those spaces. And for me, those most kind of sacred moments, there are small daily ones. So I want to create a space in each of those places that's set aside for that. Mm-hmm. But kind of the big moments, the holidays throughout the year, things like that, usually are actually going to be outside. So I don't make a major house focus or altar, but I have little ones throughout the house. So the bathroom space is one that's really important. The bathroom is a really big one, actually, because that's where I think a lot of the refocusing happens. That's where for most people, that's the first place we go in the morning, and it's the last place we go in the night before sleeping, right? So that's the start and the end of our days. So the actual shape of the room is very important, but how the light's coming in through the window and bringing little items, little rocks, or like you were saying, shells, bones, those sorts of things. And then the kitchen is the other really big one. And that's where our plants are. Our kitchen is just full of plants and greenery. The bedrooms are just for sleeping. That's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bedroom's just basically bed, nothing else. I mean, that's the only room in the house where I don't have plants. Mm. Just have beds and sleeping people. Mm-hmm. So, and then also the spot in the morning to drink the coffee or tea. I gave up coffee, but my little morning tea drink. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I've moved recently also. And so I'm in a new place, and that was why, you know, I was thinking about this subject recently, you know, the creation of sacred space and why I felt so sort of disconnected and disoriented while all of my things were in boxes, mm-hmm. and why it was so important to me to create a space in my room as soon as I could after moving. So I'm still in the midst of making decisions about the rest of the house. Nemea and I are kind of working out what the living room is going to be like, and it's mostly there, but we have a sort of blank space that we know is going to be an altar-ish space, but we don't really know what that's going to look like. So, and you know, we have a hand fasting broom with dozens of ribbons tied around it that we're going to mount over the back door. It's a sliding glass door, so we'll mount it over that and it'll be visible there. But other than that, really haven't thought it out very much yet. And so you know, over the next couple of weeks, I'm sure we'll put that together, but it's not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm. So are you more of a live in this space, kind of feel it out for a while, or decide things ahead of time? Yeah, there's so many different strategies depending on the person of like how to deal with that.
Yes, that's true. Well, this is a small space. And so like places like the kitchen, there's not really, I mean, there aren't even windowsills in the kitchen because it's double paned glass and that just takes up more room and thickness. So the sills are only about 2 inches wide. So there's very little in the way of locations where we could put things that would create that would tie in with that theme happening throughout the house. But that said, there is this, it's generally an open plan townhouse with only the bedrooms and the bathroom being kind of closed off. So, you know, the art on the walls makes a big difference. The what we finally decide is going to live on the dining area table in terms of visibility. So there's a lot of things to think about, little things to think about, and I haven't thought about them all yet.
Yeah.
Our big challenge right now is that we have several large glass-fronted cabinets with glass shelves in them that we use for displaying cool stuff. We call it the museum. And we have not yet put all the cool stuff into the shelving units yet. So that's kind of a big task that's ahead of us. And that will inevitably involve making decisions about which cool stuff gets in and which cool stuff doesn't make it and all that.
Yeah.
So, but my living spaces have always been kind of themed as, you know, welcome to the Museum of Natural History. So
that sounds so much fun.
Yeah. Oh God, we have such cool stuff. I have a whale vertebrae, whole bunch of different kinds of cool fossils, just cool stuff.
Before I forgot to mention the books, we have a lot of books. That's the thing that's always been the hardest when moving, is just boxes and boxes of books. And we can't bear to, we've gotten rid of them as we've moved from place to place. And yet there always are more than when we started when we move.
Right.
So, yeah.
I think that's particularly hard when you have small children, because if there's a book that you really value, you want to be able to share it with them as they get older. We had 37 boxes of books, 37 banker's boxes of books.
That's a lot.
In our storage unit. We went through and mercilessly culled, and now we have 26 boxes of books. But it's still 26 boxes of books, and we just can't bear to give any of it away. But it lives in a storage shelf, unit. It's not like we have any access to any of it. There are maybe three shelves of books here, and you know, they're mostly sort of coffee table style books of physical anthropology and cave paintings like that, you know.
Well, we have a wall that I am eyeing and fantasizing about one day building a ceiling to floor bookshelf up against. And actually making the bookshelves the same size as the books themselves, because most of the time with our bookshelves, there'll be several inches between the top of the bookshelf and the books. And that's where the cat goes, but that's where absolutely everything else ends up going too. And then it's just completely stuffed with non-books in the bookshelf. So I want to make them fit perfectly, because trim sizes are pretty standard. You can get, you know, all the books that are textbook sized and all the books that are, you know, mass market paperback and all of those. So
right.
That's the dream, but that's a lot of time. So
yeah,
working on all the other things of daily life and work and raising families and all of that. So there's always a prioritization when creating space, is about what can I do now? And what's going to make the biggest influence in my life and my practice right now?
Right.
Also, what's seasonally appropriate, both in the life season, but the seasons of the year as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, people generally, the earliest decisions that they make when they enter a new space are strictly logistical decisions. You know, how's the kitchen going to work? That kind of stuff.
And I don't want to move that couch upstairs.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to try and go up those stairs, or, you know, choices like that, right?
Right. Those kinds of decisions where it's like, you know, where is the couch going to live? You know, all that kind of stuff. But for us, a second layer then is this aesthetic piece, in which we sow some sacredness into the layout of the house. And it adds a lot of richness. It really does. There is something that is deeply, what's the word I'm looking for? Comforting or contentful. I don't think that's a word. About, you know, being in a space that feels as though kind of the essence of my spirituality suffuses it. The objects that I see are my friends in a way. It's almost as if they have personalities, because all of them have stories to tell about where I got them and where they come from and the sorts of rituals that I've done with them and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been doing a lot of examples of our own lives, which makes sense of where both of us have been for the past few weeks. But why don't we talk about some ideas or examples for situations in which you don't have a partner on board with you for this, or you don't have a whole house or something like that?
Well, I think if you don't have a, if you have a partner and the partner is not on board with you sacredizing your whole space, I would hope that at the least you could negotiate for a space where you can build a focus or altar to experience your own spirituality. I mean, I think that that's a very problematic issue if someone refuses to allow you to do something like that. That's denying a very essential part of you, and it doesn't bode well, in my opinion. But beyond that, beyond, you know, a simple space for an altar or focus, I think, you know, you don't have to completely sort of goth up your space in order for there to be a sense of meaning folded into the way that it's decorated. I was talking a second ago about how the objects in my room have stories. Well, everybody has objects that have stories. And if there are stories that are about your relationship or about your ancestry or about your fondness for a particular place in nature, if those objects can have a place out in the living space, then you'll feel more like you have a space in the living space. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things are very helpful.
Yeah. I think as non-theist pagans, there's a slight advantage that we have sometimes with sharing space than some of the theist pagans might have. Because although there are some non-theist pagans who do enjoy the symbology and the metaphor of deities and just don't literally believe in them, most of the time, we aren't putting up statues of pagan gods and things like that that might stand out immediately to a mother-in-law or a very conservative roommate or something like that, where the symbols that might be important to us might be that dried sunflower, or might be the bone or the seashell or the bottle of pretty river rocks or whatever it is.
Sure. A vase of feathers,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I really agree with that. I think that, and to be fair, the roommate or housemate doesn't need to know what that object means to you. You don't have to communicate that if you don't want to. You can just say, I'd like this to be out in the living space. And, you know, presumably they are reasonable and you can negotiate with them around, you know, what is out in the living space and what is not. And you just go from there. And, you know, they may, you know, they don't have to know that this beautiful rock was found when you were on a mushroom trip. They, you know, what it reminds you of isn't important. It's just the fact that it's there in your space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that that really is an advantage, because certainly some of the symbology of pagan gods can make people that aren't pagans uncomfortable, mm-hmm. especially because they tend to have a lot of nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And in our culture, you know, which has so much body shaming and so much just stuff around the human body, nudity is a no-no. You can't do that. So,
yeah. And sometimes nudity, along with being part goat or part something else, or,
right.
you know,
right.
yeah, which aesthetically, you know, I love it. I love a lot of the aesthetics of some of those deities and statues and all of that, right? I have some man with the leaves and the beard and all of that in my own home, although mm-hmm. and don't, again, believe that there's actually a guy walking around who is the embodiment of the forest or any of that, but it's beautiful. It reminds me of some of my ancestry, but that certainly was not up in my dorm in undergrad, right? That was not in a dorm room situation. It's been years since I've been in one, but I had my little box and I opened up my box and it had everything decorated. So it was like wasn't quite a shoe box. I don't really know where I'd even found it, but it just like opened up and there was the base and then the lid to it that created this kind of stage. And I had it open when I would want to be in my space, and then I closed it and it was private and very safe that way. And then for anything that I wanted really overt symbols, and then everything else was like we've been talking about, the colors or the dried flowers or things like that that matched with what was happening with the season or what we'd found outside or any of that.
Right. Yeah. And I think that tuning the degree of overtness of your symbolic placements is really just a matter, you know, of your particular situation. And, you know, hopefully you don't have deep philosophical divisions with the people that you live with, but some people do. And, you know, it's a matter of asserting your own entitlement to commonly shared spaces. Common space is really what we're talking about here. If you have a room of your own, you should be able to do whatever you want with it. But in common spaces, the decoration can be kind of up for grabs, and you just assert yourself and say, hey, you know, I'd like this rock to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was going to recommend that along the course of kind of thinking about how to create sacred space, people might want to go to the atheopaganism.org blog and go to the resources tab and download the ritual primer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ritual primer talks about a lot of different ritual technologies, ways to help to induce that very present liminal ritual state, everything from stained glass to candlelight to incense to, you know, just lots of different approaches. And so that might be a useful guide for people helping to make decisions about decorating their spaces.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and put a link in the show notes to that if anyone great. Wants to go ahead and click on that. Yeah,
great.
So I hope that your space continues to unfold and that you have wonderful sacred spaces that grow out of that.
And, well,
yeah.
Thank you. And likewise, as you move into your new home, that's very exciting. And I know you have a lot of kind of major logistical things that have to be in place for that all to happen. But of course, the mythopoetic layer is really important too.
Yeah. Well, we're almost there. We're so close. We're, you know, just a couple minor things like electricity, but you know, the rest of it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good.
So, but this has been great, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah. It's always great to talk with you, Yucca. See you next week.